Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to a special weekender this week, which is around women's football. It will start off talking about women's football in general with Alison McGovern, Emma Sanders and Molly Hudson. Then we will shift ourselves along with Emma Sanders remaining with us and adding to that with Leanne Prescott and Philippa Smallwood to talk about how Liverpool women have ended up in the situation they've ended up in this season, looking back over a couple of years. And we shall end this looking forward with John Gibbons towards what is to come for Liverpool women and whether or not we can expect matters to improve going into next season. But starting off, I've got with me Ali McGovern, Emma Sanders and Molly Hudson. And ultimately, we've timed this really rather well. We happen to be recording this segment on the day in which it was announced that the Women's Super League will firstly be on the BBC, secondly will be on Sky Sports, and thirdly, it will result into significantly more money entering the game from that sort of rights agreement, Emma. And this is something that is hugely significant, both in terms of the finances, but also in terms of the profile.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of the profile alone, you're going to get more eyes on it. You're going to get more ears on it. There's going to be a much wider audience given the opportunity to watch women's football. It'll be on mainstream free-to-air TV on the BBC, BBC One and BBC Two channels for the first time in the history of the competition, which is absolutely huge. That's, you know, at least 18 matches that are going to be watched by hopefully thousands, if not millions of people. All you have to do is look at the figures from the 2019 World Cup to see just how popular women's football was on the BBC. Then obviously Sky with the, you know, expert analysis, build-up coverage and the huge investment that they're making, which, you know, it's been widely reported is around 21 million across the three-year period, at least. So I just think it's phenomenal news. It's testament to the work that the FA themselves have put in, the footballers have put in, individual clubs, the investment that they've made, particularly at the top of the WSL pyramid, and then obviously the media and the organisations that have worked alongside them. So very exciting times for sure.
Molly, as part of this, obviously the focus will be more on the WSL. There will be the hope that that money can find ways to get further and further down the pyramid. Obviously, Liverpool will definitely play next season in the Women's Championship. But in a more wide sense, there have been issues, haven't there, for tiers 3 through 7 in the women's game in terms of both completing seasons in this sort of COVID era, but also in terms of sustainability. So the hope with this money is that it isn't just doesn't just remain in the WSL level, but that it gets right the way through the game.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a good starting point for that is the fact that 75% of the money from this broadcast deal is going to go to Women's Super League clubs and 25% is going to go to the Championship. Now, although that doesn't seem like a big amount, comparatively it is, because obviously a fair few teams in the Championship are part-time, mm-hmm. so that money is going to go a lot further than it would in the Women's Super League, for example. So in that sense, I think the Championship can be quite happy. I think speaking to some of the clubs there, they've probably got a little bit more out of this broadcast deal than maybe they anticipated. So I think that's really positive. It's sort of been a case throughout the pandemic, maybe that tiers 3 to 7 have kind of been cut off just with the fact that they were classed as, you know, non-elite sport. And the ramifications of that obviously are continuing with the fact that the leagues have been null and void again. Still waiting around to see whether teams will be able to go up to the leagues that they should be in. A couple of examples, you know, like Watford, Southampton, Ipswich, those sort of teams that have continually been sort of punching above their weight in their leagues. So I think the positive, I suppose, at this stage is this is the first broadcast deal. Yeah. And we can't expect too much too early. And I think part of the strength of this deal is going to be that exposure, which will help in turn tiers 3 to 7, even if directly not financially at this point.
The exposure is, I think, Alison, the key part. And the idea that, as Emma sort of said there as well around Sky, greater depth of analysis, greater all round. Everyone's now got more and more skin in the game in terms of ensuring that the stories of these women is told. and that they are treated in a way which reflects the seriousness with which they go about their business, how they see what they do as elite sport, how we see what they do as elite sport. All of that is reflected within this deal. And for this deal to be successful for those broadcasters, that needs to continue.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in this conversation, I always feel like my role is to be the unreasonable one, in the sense that Emma and Molly both give very strong, rational analysis of what's happening here. But let me be the sort of like politically angry voice, I suppose, in that, look, whenever somebody uses the word elite in the context of sport, we've always got to remember that phraseology is pretty toxic for women's sport, because so much of what women's sport is not classed as elite. And where does that come from? That comes from the history of women's sport being constantly held back, and that the consequences of that history, particularly in relation to football, but not only in relation to football, but particularly in relation to football, that history has had an echo down the years, which is where we get to a situation where at the start of the pandemic, it's possible to just essentially cancel the women's game in a way that does not happen in the same way to the men's game, because of the money that is in the men's game that is not in the women's game. So when we talk about, you know, the elite sports, that is a very, you know, there's a real impact on the women's game when we use that terminology to differentiate a particular area of sporting activity. So that's my like officially angry on behalf of the women of the country bit. This is a massively positive announcement though for women's football. I think the money is really, really important, but I think this is bigger than money. Because Emma called it right, that when you see the World Cup on TV and millions of people tune in, not because, being honest, women have had a fair crack of the whip when it comes to promotion of women's football, but because it is a great thing to watch and it's a very enjoyable sport to watch. And we have incredible, incredible talent there. The idea that we're all going to be able to tune in really easily is just phenomenal. At the moment, being a supporter of a women's football team, it's a bit of a logistical challenge as you try and figure out how you can watch your side. So the idea that we're all going to be able to just tune in is really phenomenal. And I think that, being honest, the financial figure allocated to the deal doesn't quite do justice as to how big this is.
Within that, Alison, given what's gone on across the last 18 months, putting the significance of this deal aside, when you're speaking there about the question around elite questions and how that can be used as a negative as much as a sort of a positive, have you found the frustration around prioritisation of women's sport in general, women's football for this conversation in particular, quite sort of difficult to stomach and to go through? Because, you know, it doesn't feel as though, I mean, in general, the game hasn't necessarily been built to be able to deal with such a structural shock as the pandemic has been. But it really does feel as though the women's game has been left to be very much second class within that.
Definitely. And, you know, we know that, I think there's some figures out now saying that the number of days that women have lost in professional sport is much greater than the number of days that men have lost. And that's not fair. And I don't accept that if there's a talented girl and a talented boy who've both got talent in the sport of football, that one's prospects in terms of income that they could attract because of that talent and their hard work is huge in comparison to the other just on the basis of gender. I don't think we should accept that situation. And the pandemic has shown the consequences of that, where women have lost out in a way that is just not acceptable in comparison to men. So that's the bad bit. The good bit is that when put in front of the public, women's football is a very, very attractive prospect, and I think has huge opportunities. And hopefully this announcement in terms of the package would just be the beginning of that.
Emma, with the package comes, I would argue, a greater responsibility, a responsibility to be more transparent. One of the things that, for instance, you can have a long argument about within the men's game, within the allocation of resource, is whether or not it trickles down, whether or not it trickles across continents. We've discussed here 75% to the WSL, 25% to the Championship. But one of the things that feels very difficult to be known in the public sphere, and I feel I might be pushing against a bit of an open door here, around the women's game is questions around wages, questions around contracts, questions around fees, questions around all how all that works. Part of making it and putting it at the centre of national attention will mean there will have to be more openness in that. And I am beginning to move the conversation towards Liverpool women in this, in terms of being able to see what club strategies are, what the practices are, what they are prepared to invest, what they're not prepared to invest. By taking this money, the clubs are opening themselves up to that, aren't they, for the first time?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the key word there is accountability, isn't there? And I think that's something that the Football Association have kind of figured out in the last couple of years, while the England national team in particular has had a lot more attention. You know, the FA have been held accountable by people within the media and also supporters and clubs themselves for actions or decisions or, you know, the way that their organisation has run. And in turn, you'd like to think that the FA has grown because of it, certainly on the women's football side. You know, this broadcast deal being part of that, because that was something that people were calling out for. You know, why aren't England games in particular being shown on this channel or this channel? And in turn, the FA have, you know, started to build the visibility of the game. So I think that's an example of where that accountability has certainly proven a good thing for women's football. And I absolutely agree. I think clubs now that haven't been investing are going to be the ones that are falling behind, because, you know, Liverpool, a prime example, if they had invested alongside the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester City, who have now been reaping the rewards for their investment globally and commercially, they're, you know, they're some of the top teams in women's football now, particularly Chelsea and Manchester City. Liverpool could have been in that bracket, and now they're finding themselves in the Championship. And as Molly rightfully said, you know, comparatively that 25% is going to be beneficial, but they could have been part of the 75% share, and they could have been part of that WSL group who will be attracting large TV attention, more sponsorship, better players, global attention, international rights, the list goes on. And that's as a result of, you know, in institutionally not investing at a time when they perhaps had the ability to, whereas other teams and other clubs, as Ali mentioned earlier, took that risk, made losses, and are now starting to see the rewards for that, for having that belief in women's football and where it could eventually grow.
In terms of that growth, Molly, there is relatively well established a sort of a historically with Arsenal on their investments in women's football, latterly with Manchester City and Chelsea, and then very last of all, Manchester United. There is a genuine possibility here, isn't there, that within the WSL, that those four teams will continue to be predominantly the strongest sides out there. That is a challenge that the WSL perhaps in a sense has to deal with, but simultaneously, it may well be, you know, within the interests of the league at the moment to be able to focus in on battles between those four sides. It is important that other teams don't get left behind, but ultimately those four sides I've mentioned have got significant fan bases and have had them for some time.
Yeah, I think it sort of goes the good and the bad sense, a bit like what you were saying there. I think actually this season, the addition of Man United has almost bridged that gap from the top three that were virtually unbeatable between anyone that wasn't themselves, mm-hmm, to now, you know, your Evertons and your Reddings. Actually, Man United are sort of bridging the gap in a way. So, yes, obviously the head-to-heads between Chelsea, United, Arsenal and City are the ones that naturally broadcasters are going to focus on. We focus on in the media as well. But I think, you know, I do think it has helped a little bit, and it will continue to be, the more this sort of money comes into the game from these broadcast deals, it will even the playing field, because yes, some of this money will be distributed on merit, but some of it will also be, you know, equal for the teams. And I think that will only help them bridge that gap, and that's what we've sort of seen in the men's game. Of course, there's going to be a group of teams that are better, that are always competing for trophies, but I don't think there'll be that sort of crazy gap where you look at Arsenal's title-winning season, they were beating Yeovil, you know, 7-0. very early on. You're not going to get that much of a gap now because teams like Yeovil, sadly, just can't compete with the level that they'll need to be at to get into the Women's Super League.
And there's some structural things as well that aren't to do with any of the individual teams, like refereeing, stadia, you know, all of the kind of infrastructure stuff that needs to happen. You know, this deal hopefully opens that up in a way that actually does help all sides. You don't need to be Arsenal to benefit from that.
Just in terms of, you know, mentioning their better facilities and pitches, Alison, Liverpool are our example and the one that we will use. You know, Liverpool will have a group of sponsors who will wonder why they aren't getting the same exposure through women's football that ultimately is now out there for sponsors of Arsenal, Manchester United, Chelsea, the obvious ones that we've just all mentioned. There will be pressure internally upon clubs, not just Liverpool, but as I say, Liverpool are our example of choice, to say that if we are investing in you, we need to be part of that greater exposure. There's every chance that the only top flight football available on the BBC across the next three seasons will be women's football. There's a place there where logos will want to be seen, where more people may be watching women's football week in, week out than are actually watching men's because it is on the BBC. And all of that will lead to pressure, won't it, within football clubs?
Yeah, I think two things. I think this is where the massive growth opportunity is. That you could say women's football has been historically undervalued, both in social terms, but also crucially in financial terms. Like, there's a massive growth opportunity here in terms of sport. So I think that's a really good thing for all those reasons that you mentioned, what's going on in the advertising market and all of that. The growth opportunity is absolutely clear. My slight word of warning on this would be, I'd just like everybody to remember these conversations when the inevitable backlash happens, because it will. Resetting these like social inequalities is never easy. So I think we've all just got to remember that this is a good thing. Women's equality in football is a good thing. There will be a backlash at some point, but we have to remember that this is a fantastic opportunity for women and for sport in the UK, and keep true to that when the inevitable backlash happens.
Very, very quickly, Molly, Emma, who's going to win the league this season, the WSL?
Go on, Molly, you go first.
Oh, wow. I think Chelsea, but I think I'm torn between thinking that maybe Chelsea win the Champions League and then they take their eye off the Super League and then City win it. So that's neither here nor there.
It is neither here nor there as an answer. You can't give me both
okay.
Answers.
I'll go Chelsea.
Chelsea, okay.
So Emma? I actually, yeah, at the beginning of the season, I said Manchester City for kind of the reason that Molly touched on. I thought Chelsea would not that they would struggle, but I just think they would have their eyes on the Champions League as a priority. But actually, given the way Chelsea have manoeuvred the fixtures so far and the draw that they've been handed in the Champions League, potentially, you know, the route to the final, I actually think that Chelsea can do both this season.
Okay. Thank you very much to Emma, to Molly and to Alison. Molly and Alison will be disappearing off and will be replaced in our on-off system for this show by Leanne Prescott and Philippa Smallwood. We will be back with you in a second or two.
It's John Gibbons for the weekend with an insert, and it is to promote LinkedIn Air Talent Solutions. Now, 2021 is hopefully looking up, which means there should be plenty of new opportunities to grow your business, whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees. One thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. So when you're ready to make the next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. Now, this is a nice one for us at the Anfield Wrap, because we've actually used LinkedIn to find our latest employee, completely coincidentally, Michael, who's come on board with us recently on the social media and marketing side. We found through LinkedIn, and it was fantastic for us. It was a very easy process, and it also meant that we could look for internationally, really, and we found Michael, who'd been working out in Spain. He's from Brighton originally, but he was out in Spain, and he was able to find us, and we had some fantastic applicants from all over the world. In fact, it was really difficult to whittle it down to a shortlist, and then even more tricky to whittle it down to the one we did hire. But we're delighted with Michael, and we're delighted with LinkedIn for helping us find him. So when your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person for yourself with LinkedIn LinkedIn jobs, and now you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/wrap. So that's WRAP. So linkedin.com/wrap. And post your job for free. And yeah, hope you find someone as wonderful as Michael is proving to be for us.
Welcome back, Neil Atkinson with Emma Sanders, Leanne Prescott and Philippa Smallwood on this special weekend show that focuses in on women's football and then becomes a conversation around Liverpool women. This is the segment of the show where we are looking back at what brought Liverpool women to this situation where they currently sit in the Championship with little to no hope of promotion at this stage of proceedings. If we're all honest about it, they find themselves having toiled through a fair bit of the season, it is fair to say. But we want to look back before then in terms of framing this conversation for you, the listeners, and in terms of being able to say what led Liverpool to this situation. And Philippa, first and foremost, Liverpool women weren't good last season. They did have hard lines in the end with the points per game, way in which it ended up with them being relegated. But there just sort of remains, and I think remains for a lot of the supporter base, a feel that alarm bells perhaps should have been ringing earlier, that there was perhaps a little bit of complacency within the club. Whatever steps have been taken since then, it does just sort of feel as though it was only when the fire began to genuinely burn that Liverpool women got the requisite attention.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair. You know, last season, Liverpool just didn't do well enough. You know, they got themselves into a situation that meant that they gave the FA the opportunity to basically make the decision to relegate them. And however much we feel that was a tough decision for the club and maybe the wrong one, you know, they didn't play well enough to give themselves the opportunity not to be in that situation. I just, you know, it feels like Liverpool pretty much had 2 years where the club just didn't care enough about the women's team, possibly even longer than that. You know, it was at the bottom of the pecking order. Maybe, like you say, there was a complacency there, that, you know, they could just saunter on the way that they were doing and that they would always just be in the WSL. And, you know, as things transpired last season, you know, to only have won one game out of 14 by the time that the league actually got curtailed, it, you know, that's going to put anybody in a relegation scrap. And, you know, no matter how much we try and dress that up, you know, the club really did drop the ball in relation to the women's team. You know, and whether or not that was down to the owners or whether or not that was down to Peter Moores, who, you know, has since left the club and, you know, things have changed since he's gone. Yeah, I don't think we will ever know, but, you know, the club has more than deserved the criticism that it's had over the past couple of years, in my opinion, and, you know, only now seem to be doing something to address that.
There does appear to be work being done to address it at the moment, Emma, before we get onto the specifics of this season and even looking ahead with John later on. One of the things about the structures that are being put in place now, one of the things that I find frustrating from the outside is that those structures and that decision making, it isn't a matter of cost. It's not been a matter of cost, this, from a Liverpool point of view, as far as I can see. It's been a matter of care. And I think that whilst that care may well have changed now, Emma, while there may now be greater awareness and whilst this season's been difficult for reasons we'll come on to, there is within it all that feeling that it was a careless process that led Liverpool to where they find themselves now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I've said this before. Look, Liverpool haven't been throwing money at the women's team, but they've certainly had more money and higher budgets than a lot of the teams around them. You know, in the Championship this season, their budget is far, far greater than any team really that is in or around them, apart from, you know, arguably Leicester this season. But in terms of player budgets and things like that, they've had the money, they've had the wages. It's not been anything near what a club the size of Liverpool Football Club as an entire club should be putting into the women's team, but it's certainly higher than the teams that were in and around them in the relegation battle last season. So from a money perspective, yeah, you could argue that they had enough, but still not good enough, as I say, but enough. But it's more the resources and the facilities and the general treatment around the women's team. You know, when they were merged with the men's side in 2014, you thought, right, here we go, this global brand of what Liverpool Football Club is going to be the women and the men. That's them in it together. apart from a couple of PR stunts, it's not been the case, let's be honest. A pre-season tour to America where the teams are together, that's fine. You know, that's a week or two in the limelight. But actually, when the teams, you know, came together again for the start of the season, you've got, you know, a multi-million pound training base being built, and the women are playing in, you know, a completely separate stadium, a separate ground, separate training grounds, under a different club's name. So a club the size of Liverpool, which, by the way, isn't uncommon in women's football, but as I've said before, a club the size of Liverpool should be putting the same kind of emphasis on the women's side that, you know, their Merseyside rivals Everton have been doing. They've got their own stadium now, they've got their own sponsors, they're attracting individual women's sort of brands and sponsors on board with the support of the men's side, and it's very much a one club thing. But that's just not really been the case with Liverpool, and they've kind of been left behind because of that. All you have to do is look at Manchester City and Chelsea and Arsenal and see how they've managed to build the brand around their women's team alongside the men's team. And it's just that general sense of inequality that's kind of existed around Liverpool for a few years now.
Leanne, it's hard within all of that, which both Philippa and Emma have said, it's hard to still now feel sorry for the institution. It is easy, though, to feel sorry for the women who've been left carrying the can. And that's one of the reasons why it's been, I think, for a lot of supporters, difficult to almost talk about the women's team, because you don't want to articulate sentiments that are too harsh, but simultaneously it's nowhere near good enough. But the ways in which it's nowhere near good enough, you know, you can have conversations about individual players here and there, but you don't want to feel as though you're left just sort of piling it all in that one specific place. It's been an institutional failure, not an individual solely footballing failure.
Yeah, definitely. And as Emma said there, you know, there's plenty of clubs you can point to and say, you know, they have put in the effort, they have built an environment that's kind of conducive to success. You look at Man City and the way that their social media team, who I think they're one of the best at kind of combining their men's and women's team, they've not just done a whole team photograph, they've actually carried it on. And it's that two teams, one club mantra that Liverpool sometimes, it feels like they've missed the boat. They've done a few tokens, but they've not really run with it. And I think for me, the most telling part is sort of 2018, 2019, when the players leave, they're very clear on the reasons why. And it's, I want an environment that's going to challenge me. I want something that's going to further the women's game. And I think for Liverpool, that's unfortunately quite a damning indictment of where the club is. They're not necessarily putting in the funding or investment they should be. And I do understand, you know, some people who maybe aren't as familiar with the women's game say, well, there's not a lot of money in it. Why would you put the money in the first place? But as Emma said, there's loads of teams that are reaping the rewards of doing that. Everton are one of the best examples. And they've got a fan base who is really behind their women's team. I think for Liverpool, it's a missed opportunity. And any Liverpool team should be the best in the business, should be right up there. And unfortunately, the club at the moment have kind of missed the boat on that.
In terms of, I'm going to ask all three of you very similar questions about this season. Start with you, Emma. In terms of resource, you just said there about Liverpool probably having a budget in excess of anyone in the division, with the possible exception of Leicester. Women's football budgets are very opaque. They're difficult to get the specifics on, but that does seem to be the case. Do you feel as though, in terms of that resource, in terms of attitude, in terms of understanding the competition, do you feel as though Liverpool women were adequately prepared for this season?
Yeah, I mean, As far as I can understand it, I think the player budget for Liverpool going into this season was about £500,000, which is quite high for a championship team. So I think they had the budget there, they had the sort of capability to bring players in. I think what they were lacking were the attractions to bring players in. I think for too long, Liverpool have been relying on the badge and the global sort of attraction of Liverpool Football Club as a whole. But actually, as the women's game has grown, and as we've sort of already touched on, you know, the likes of Everton, etc., I think players are now... Reading, exactly. Yeah, Reading's a great example. You know, players are now thinking, well, it's not enough to play for the badge. You know, I'm a professional athlete now, which they weren't, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. They're a professional athlete now, so they want the best facilities. They want the best doctors, physios, coaches, training, you know, training facilities, living accommodation, just everything from being able to attract sponsors and, you know, have the best team around you. And unfortunately, while Liverpool might have had the player budgets going into the season, I don't think they had the attraction. So I think that was always going to be a difficulty. Obviously, dropping down into the Championship from the WSL anyway was going to be hard to attract the quality of players that you needed. But I still believe the players that Liverpool had going into the start of this season, and as I say, the player budget that they had, even to be able to attract the best talent from the Championship, should have been enough for Liverpool to have had a successful season in the Championship, in this campaign.
Philippa, did you feel as though, having seen the vast majority of every single game this season, the attitude and understanding the nature of this league has been right from this Liverpool side, this Liverpool setup? Do you feel as though they've anticipated that challenge well enough, or do you think that's been a shortcoming?
I think it's really difficult, because in hindsight, I would look at it now and I would say, I can see now that maybe we are missing the physical capabilities to stand up to some of the more physical sides like your Durhams. And I think that's possibly something that we've lacked. But I wouldn't have said that last summer, and I would have said that our main priority was keeping hold of players and keeping that nucleus of what was a fairly decent side together, and we managed to do that. So mm-hmm. It's really difficult for me to basically say that I think that we got it wrong back then. What I would possibly say is I think that if the season had played out of last season, one, I think we would have stayed up, but two, I think even if we had have gone down, I think there would have been a change in management and a change in the structure from that point. And I think basically what's happened is, because of how it happened last season, it wouldn't have... I don't think that the club felt it would have been fair to basically change the management at that point. Because it was kind of taken out of their hands and they didn't get the opportunity to play out the season and to see, you know, what they could do with better backing, so to speak. And I think if maybe the club had the time again, maybe they would make a different choice. And that's no disrespect on Vicky. You know, I was surprised that they pulled the trigger when they did. But I think that if there was one area where I would say maybe we were a little bit naive, it was maybe in that area.
With those two things combined, Leanne, I wonder about the TV news that's broken and the shift in focus for the WSL, whether or not Liverpool, you know, they will look back and feel as though they could possibly have done more because of what's to come next. You know, it was long trailed, the idea that at some point there would be a heftier TV deal for women's football, but right now it really does feel as though Liverpool are in danger of missing the boat, and that's what worries me about sort of adequate preparation for the season. You know, this is a Liverpool side now that won't play WSL football until 2022 at the earliest, August 2022 at the earliest, and you do wonder in the context of that whether or not, you know, the club will end up so many steps behind, it will become difficult to catch up and arguably more expensive.
Yeah, I think definitely they've missed the boat, especially with the news of the TV deal. And it kind of goes to show that there is a lot of interest in women's football. So anyone that says that there isn't, you know, is being proven wrong. But I would almost disagree. I think on paper, Liverpool did do a lot right last summer. Pre-season went pretty well. Signed some good players with Taylor Hines, Michaela Moore. They got kind of a more physical edge to them on paper. But unfortunately, it's been a case of missed opportunities. I do think a lot of people maybe came into the Championship, players and fans alike probably, and didn't quite realise how competitive a league it is. Yep. And Leicester and Durham showed that pretty quickly. And it became a case, as Philip has said, you have to kind of be physical, stand up for yourself. And while Liverpool kind of had the resources to do so, they didn't manage to. I do think it's a massive shame, particularly with the way that women's football is getting a lot more limelight now and a lot more kind of awareness for the sport, that Liverpool aren't right up there. And I just hope that, you know, in the next kind of few weeks and months, that they make the decisive action that they,
you know, they promised a year ago.
Do you feel, Leanne, the physicality of the championship really has come as a shock to them? I was at the first game where they faced Durham, and it looked to me, you know, Liverpool got themselves 1-0 ahead in that game and couldn't see it out. And, you know, it's really easy to say a what-if moment there, but Durham sort of built from that point from strength to strength. And it felt like that day Liverpool sort of displayed a weakness. I didn't for 1 minute think Durham were a better football team in any meaningful way than Liverpool. But yet, you know, they've ended up with significantly more points. So it shows what I know. My point being, though, you know, that Liverpool found themselves in this situation where they couldn't compete, and it may be in a very specific area, and it may be just flagged to the rest of the division. This is how you rattle this Liverpool team.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good example. Lose away as well, being another one. I think they conceded a goal pretty late on in that one. And there's a few, you know, frustrating moments where so many chances created, so many opportunities to run away with the game not taken, concede a late goal and a head to go down. And then on the flip side, you've got, you know, great results in the cup against Man United, great performances of Rachel Furness, opportunities that say this team is going to be there or thereabouts come the end of the season. I think it was just a lot of getting used to the surroundings of the championship. As you say, it is a tough league, and a lot of players, you know, probably came into it unexpected circumstance of what Liverpool are going to do. There was a lot of expectation that we would just bounce straight back up, and Leicester and Durham, to their credit, have performed really well. They know the league better and they've shown it. And as you say, they've exposed Liverpool's weaknesses.
Last part of this, Emma, is before John steps in, and we can't talk about what can come next, is though that Liverpool women have left themselves now without room for any sort of further errors, to be frank. You know, the idea that they've got to get whatever comes next right, both in terms of managerial appointments, but also in terms of what they're doing in the transfer market, literally what the plan is to get out of this division now. There will be a team from the WSL that will be relegated. They'll be looking to bounce straight back as well. There is no room for manoeuvre, is there, for this Liverpool side now? They really do have to address this in the next 12 months.
Absolutely, and I think that's why they're taking their time and they're taking care over this managerial appointment, because it has to be the right appointment. There's been a lot of interest in the role, and I think that's because people recognise now that this is kind of the start of a new era for Liverpool women. Hopefully, if the club, you know, sort of back their word and say, you know, where they've said we are gonna back the women's team and they follow through with that, because you look at the likes of Charlton Athletic in the Championship, who are, you know, are kind of a bottom half side, and they're going to be throwing money at it next season when they go professional under Karen Hills, who's obviously just come in as former Tottenham manager. They're going to be seriously one to watch, I would imagine. Lewis, who are obviously a community run club, but very, very good financial model, brilliant board. They know what they're doing. They're going from strength to strength. And then obviously Leicester, you know, they look like they're probably going to be the team to go up. And I think they'll be difficult really to kind of beat in the WSL next season. So I think given the backing and the investment around them, if they can recruit well in the summer, I think, you know, that they'll be looking to stay up. And then obviously Durham will be there or thereabouts. So, you know, there's those whispers about Coventry as well, going professional, going full-time next season. So there's lots of clubs in the Championship that from next season onwards are going to be putting money in. So Liverpool are going to have to do some really good work this summer with that new management team in terms of recruitment as well. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a couple of players who leave. I believe there's 9 players that are going to be out of contract this summer, so whether or not they sign on or not is going to be interesting. So I think there's going to be lots of changes, but I think the majority of it could be positive. And like I say, for the new manager that's coming in, there's a genuine sort of, you know, foresight there that there could be, you know, a 3 to 4 or 5 year plan. And if they are backed in the way that Liverpool are promising that they will be, then hopefully Liverpool can get back to the heights that they deserve to be at, that they've not really been at for a good 6-7 years now.
More on this to come with John Gibbons, looking ahead to what needs to be next for Liverpool Football Club. Philippa and Leanne will be with John as well. We'll say goodbye to Emma now and to me as well. Hope you've enjoyed this Women's Weekend. And from my behalf, over now to John Gibbons.
And it's the last fan standing quiz, and it's John Gibbons bringing you a quiz that we're going to do with a subscriber, and we're going to do a demonstration of the Last Fan Standing app. Last Fan Standing is an app that you can download on your phone. It's available on iPhone and Android, and it basically tests your LFC knowledge. There's LFC quizzes going up there all the time, hosted by me and Neil, and there's also predictor quizzes around the games where you can win some pretty cool prizes. How it works is you keep going, and if you are still correct right to the end, you are the Last Fan Standing. And you get all the glory that comes with that. So we're going to do a little bit of a demonstration now, and I found a willing assistant, and it is Marco from the Netherlands. Marco, thanks so much for coming on.
Hiya, no worries.
Did you spot that I completely bottled your surname there?
No, it's funny to hear my surname from Scouts. Actually, I've been on the Redman. One of the guys tried to pronounce it, but I think. I think it was Neil as well who tried it on one of the live things on Facebook.
Ah, okay.
It was funny to hear, but I prefer just Marco.
Go on, I'll have a go. Marco Schurink. I'm going to go with Schurink.
Schurink.
that was beautiful. I love the role. It was all in the role there, wasn't it? Much more exciting. But Marco, how are you, mate? Anyway, how's life?
I'm all right. It's a bit tough because I'm self-employed. I'm a photographer, but so on that part it's not the best as with the footy. So overall life is all right. I'm getting by, so no worries about that. So
yeah, have you ever took any pictures over here? Have you brought your camera over to Liverpool and done some shots?
I have. I think one time we went with my girlfriend. I went for a week, so we went like all around Liverpool. At the cathedral, and we did lots of stuff. So that was like more like a tourist round. So that was quite cool. But mostly, I don't like to take my camera when I go to Anfield. So I want to enjoy and leave my camera at home.
Live in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we've got some questions for you. I've dug out an old quiz from earlier in the season that we played on Last Fan Standing. So I'm hoping it is still relevant, but we'll see how we go. So we'll get started. Okay. So question one is, which player scored Liverpool's goal in the 2020 Community Shield against Arsenal? So we started out this season, played the Community Shield against Arsenal. Who scored Liverpool's goal? Was it Mo Salah or Taki Minamino?
Mo Salah.
It was Minamino. Oh, we fell at the first. Hurdle. It is. It's so long ago.
I thought it was good. The first one, but also in the Premier League against Crystal Palace. I thought that was the first one for Liverpool as well.
Oh dear, Marco, zero. It would have to happen once. Yeah,
it's so long ago. It happened so many stuff happened in this season. So.
I know. I feel bad because I've dug out an old quiz for you there, but never mind. So just before you go, you sort of, for you guys, you normally sort of have headed over to Anfield in this period. You haven't been able to, and you must be missing the city as much as anything else.
Yeah, I miss the city a lot actually. We've been planning a lot of trips. Some of my mates when we go, and we have to postpone so many. We had, of course, we had flights for the end of the season for maybe a parade. Postponed so many trips, but the city as well. I just love the city and the mentality of the people. So it fits with the mentality on this side of the Netherlands as well. So that's
boss.
Yeah,
boss. Well, it was nice talking to you, man. Come in and see us next time you're over. Come and have a beer, and it'd be nice to meet you properly. I'm just looking forward to welcoming people to our city again, to be honest with you. I'm inviting the world, but you're more than welcome to come in and see the studio I'm in, which is completely empty. We'll crack open the beer. So it'll be nice to welcome you.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Cheers. Tom Mann. Last Fan Standing app. It's available on your phone to download. Get stuck in. Thanks to Marco. Up the Reds. And now it's John Gibbons hosting the weekend. And we've got the positive part. Well, I think it's the positive part. Obviously, it's up to my guests how positive they want to be. But hopefully, they'll be positive. But why not? Because Liverpool are running a good run of form, a good few wins in a bounce. And hopefully, have some good performances to look forward to as well. But to go through all that, I've got Joe Goodall. I've got Mariam Naz. I've got Philippa Sward. And I've got Leanne Prescott. And I'll start with you, Leanne. The results have been good recently. It's three good wins in a row. We've seen goals, clean sheets as well. What do you put the good recent run down to?
Yeah, I think it has been a good little run. I think Abo at least done really well to kind of steady the ship. Obviously, Vicky Jepson leaving off the back of, or before the big Leicester game was a bit of a shock given the timing. but the team have responded really well. Charlton, okay, a little bit of a disappointment to concede 90th minute, but I think that was just kind of a strange game generally. People will say Liverpool should beat these teams, but I think it's progress in the sense that at the start of the season, there was a few disappointing draws, goals conceded late on, clean sheets not being kept. So yeah, a really good platform to build off and loads of goals to celebrate, which is great.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Philippa, in that obviously the 5-0 is an eye-catching result, and it's great to see this Liverpool team get the goals that the players often deserve, but they haven't found out. But also that Palace game, I'm thinking a month or two ago, we'd have drawn that. We'd have conceded a soft one and drawn it 1-0. So I think both results, in a funny sort of way, sort of pleased me equally.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even the Leicester game, for me, we played really well for me in the first half. And it was only down to the fact that, you know, we had a red card at the very beginning of the second half. And even then, I felt we played really well after that. It's just obviously when you've got 10 players on the pitch, you know, eventually a team like Leicester's going to wear you down. And, you know, they are the best side in the league this season. So For me, the thing that's changed is I think that just going forward, we seem a lot more positive. We seem a lot more aggressive and direct, I would say. There was periods, I think, in the first half of the season where I felt we were getting in good positions and then, you know, sending the ball out wide, which was making the situation less threatening. And it could be frustrating at times. And, you know, maybe part of it's down to pressure as well. You know, they've got themselves into a situation now where they knew it was likely that they weren't going to be promoted. So almost like the pressure's come off them and maybe they've relaxed a little bit more as well and just eased the way into these other fixtures. But there could be also be the point of, you know, trying to impress the manager. You know, nobody's guaranteed the spot at the moment. And, you know, there's this real sense at the moment that every player is really playing for the position. And it's good to see, to be honest, that, you know, everybody seems to be coming in. They all seem to be playing their part in what the team's doing and in the positive results. And I've just been really impressed with them, to be honest, since Amber's come in.
Yeah, there's definitely been a new manager bounce, hasn't there, Mariam? And sometimes that new voice, well, newish voice, obviously she was at the club already, but new person sort of giving the team talks and things and just kind of can bring, you know, a little bit more out of certain players. And I would agree with Philippa that it has seemed like the players been a little bit more positive to me and they just seem to be enjoying themselves a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing. There was so much sort of pressure and talk around the club that I think it definitely sort of infected the players themselves. And there was a lot of pressure they were carrying on the pitch. Excuse me. And then, you know, we had that shock, you know, manager change. It kind of threw everything up. And I think there was a lot of doubt even going into the new change when Amber Woolley came in. But, you know, she changed things up, changed formation. You know, we're looking at a 4-2-3-1 formation. She gave players the space to be more creative and to really come into their own. And I think that you can see that in the performance. It's not just the fact that there are goals, you know, and that we're being more attacking and more aggressive, as Philippa has mentioned, but also the fact that players are expressing themselves more and they're getting the opportunity to do that. And I think we're seeing that in the results, like, you know, 5 goals against Coventry. It was an amazing performance.
Yeah, I mean, nothing helps a club more as well than when a new player comes in, Joe, and really hits the ground running and scoring goals. And Kerry Holland being better than Mia Hamm has helped, it is fair to say. She's been incredible and her teammates seem to love it as well.
Yeah, I think she's integrated into the team really well. She's only been here now just under 2 months and you can already see the difference within the team. The fact that, you know, Kerry's linking a lot of the play together. She's great on the defensive, but she's also got that attacking side to her, which, you know, any team is lucky to have a player like that. So I just hope she's going to, you know, keep throwing a few more goals in and carry on as she is.
There's, I think, 5 league games left now, Leanne, and an opportunity for the manager to try different things, maybe to go for a couple of younger players if she wants, but also, I guess, to move herself in contention for the big job if she does want it, or the permanent job, should I say. Do you think it's possible that she could put herself into contention for that, or do you think because of everything that has gone on and because maybe mistakes been made in the past that they will go for someone, you know, with more experience or maybe sort of a bit more of a name to sort of lead Liverpool into next season?
I think she's given herself a great kind of opportunity to potentially get the long-term job. I think, as the girls have said, you know, the atmosphere within the dressing room seems really positive. It's not just the results, it's the way that the players are playing, the way they're expressing themselves, the attitude as well. I know after the Leicester game, the players were coming out and say, you know, we had a mountain to climb, now it just got even bigger, and there was a lot of kind of negativity. Whereas now there's genuine hope, there's a way that this team can play football, there's loads of different avenues of attack. And I just think there's a bit more of a blueprint and a plan about the way that this team wants to play, that, you know, she should be given the opportunity to be able to take the job on. I know some people think that Liverpool taking their time over the appointment is a good thing. And I understand, you know, it's a massive decision that the club have to make, and they do have to get this one right. But I think we've been here in the past where we've said this, and, you know, you don't want the uncertainty to come back and fester amongst that squad. You have to capitalise on the positivity right now. And if a manager's done, you know, all the world of good, she's not really put a foot wrong, I don't see why she shouldn't get given the opportunity to do so.
Where do you want it, Philippa?
I mean, I would be quite happy for Amber to be given the role. I think she's shown more than enough to be given that opportunity. But I'm very much where Leanne said some people are positive about them taking the time, and I'm one of those. I'm very much of the opinion that they need to get this decision right. To basically rush this decision and have somebody in the week after Vicky had, you know, had lost her job, I think would have been the wrong move. And I think it shows that actually the club do care. The fact that they are taking the time over it, that, you know, that they actually want to get it right. I think that's actually a good thing. And I think doing it this way, you know, there was no chance of the team actually getting promoted at the time that Amber's come in. So what is your reason then for rushing to get somebody in? You know, you give somebody the opportunity to basically see what they can do. You know, we've no idea if they were happy with what Amber was doing in the background before she was given this opportunity, and they may have seen her as somebody who they might like to give the job to, and have kind of given her this kind of like little bit of a run. For me, I think it's just important that we have that person in place, whoever it may be, whether it's Amber or whether or not it's somebody from outside the club, that we have them in place and ready to go by the end of the season, that we know who it's going to be, and that they can have the whole of pre-season basically to get their team together and to get them working how they want them to. And I think that's what the plan of the club is. And, you know, I know that doesn't suit everybody, but I think it's the right way that they're going about it, for me anyway.
Yeah, it does feel, Joe, that the success of the team, recent success of the team, just allowed everyone to buy themselves a little bit of time. And obviously, if results hadn't improved or even deteriorated, because obviously that could have happened, you know, people would have been clamouring for, you know, a job, clamouring for sort of a name to come in and change everything around and talking about ambition. Whereas obviously Amber doing well and the team doing well just means that they can pause, they can have a look and see how Amber does between the next now and the end of the season, but also have a look around and see, you know, who is best, because it's a massive, massive, and I guess every appointment's big, but it does feel like a really big one, this one.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of the, you know, the questions that fans are asking is, you know, why hasn't there been an appointment straight away? You know, it wouldn't happen in the men's game is a comment that we hear a lot. And it's like, well, yeah, it wouldn't happen in the men's game, but this isn't the men's game. I know we all want equality for the women, but I feel like there is still a long way to go until we can actually get that. After speaking to the club a couple of weeks ago, I do know that they actually had over 140 applicants for the job role. So, you know, how are you meant to whittle that down when over 100 of them are actually suitable candidates? It's going to be a long process. And, yeah, we all want someone to come in as soon as possible and, you know, see where they can take the team for next season. But, you know, like Philippa and Leanne have said, and Mariam as well, like, you know, Amber's doing a great job at what she's doing at the moment. She's pulled the team together. They're working a lot more positively together. And I think, you know, going forward, we want the club to get it right. maybe in the past the same thing has happened where, you know, someone stepped into that manager's role. But I think with the fact that we've got like new staff and new players within the club at the minute, I just think just give it a little bit of time and just see what happens this time.
Yeah, a little bit of time, Avi, and see what happens. And, you know, Amber can, you know, be positive in these last five games. And that's what I'd like to see Liverpool be generally, you know, looking into this. It would be to, you know, to use a squad, you know, to try a few different things in terms of, you know, formations or players, and maybe utilise players in slightly different ways, and just sort of, you know, have the confidence to experiment and almost showcase herself as a manager as much as the players on the pitch as well.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. I think we've seen, like, you know, we know that she needed time when she came in. When that decision wasn't made straight away, I think we all knew, like fans and people within the club, that the club needed time to get back to where it was, and it needed time to understand from a tactical perspective in the squad how that would look like. Changing formation as Amber has now playing sort of a 4-2-3-1, that's really opened up the midfield. And we've seen more goals because it's allowing that channel through to attack to be created. Players like Missy Bo and, you know, those players in the midfield that are creating so many more chances now. We're seeing that in the goals. You wonder whether or not this is a platform to build on now. Like, we understand that, you know, a manager change wasn't made so abruptly, but if Amber can keep up what she's doing and that progress keeps going, then it's a really good idea to keep that going. And I think that's the thing, progress is important, because it's just been so stop-start, especially in the second league of the women's Super League. It's so difficult to do that at that level. And I think that they're doing a really good job at the moment, and that's something you should stick with. Consistency is so key, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that takes me on to the squad, Leanne, in terms of consistency, because ideally you'd like Liverpool to keep the nucleus of this squad, keep all the players, you know, that are doing well at the moment, add two or three, you know, in key areas and kick on from there. It's a little bit more difficult that is, in that you've got Vinsola, for example, at the moment, who's training with the youth teams, was training on her own at one point, who said she wants to go. There'll be other players as well who are out of contract, because obviously, the, you know, we're talking about the difference between women's and men's football. The contracts are much shorter, and there'll be players who are out of contract in the summer. We'll be looking, you know, around their options, but also looking to see, well, what are Liverpool going to do? How serious are they? And should I sort of commit my next couple of years to them? And obviously sort of, you know, players coming in as well. We'll be looking at, you know, Liverpool in terms of, well, it's a huge club, but what do we sort of, you know, what are their ambitions? And so I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, you know, how much do you think Liverpool can keep what they want from this squad and add a couple, or do you think we might inevitably see a few drift away and it'll be a bit more of a rebuilding process than what we'd like?
I think obviously everyone associated with the club wants to keep as many players as possible. This team has been through so many rebuilds, you know, 2018, 2019. There's been way too many players leaving, and it's been really difficult for Jepsen and now potentially Amber to be able to kind of progress and build a long-term plan when you're just in a perpetual cycle of change. I think Babajide is probably one that you're almost resigned to losing. Great player. Really would be really sad to see her go, but it looks like that one's kind of set in stone. I think the good thing for where Liverpool are at the moment, and as we mentioned, they're building a platform long-term. So it remains to be seen whether Amber's the person who takes this job on or not. But there's a lot of young players around this squad that are very promising. Missy Bo in particular is really, really good. You've got the likes of Rachel Furness then, who can build up the leadership within this team, add a bit of, you know, authority and aggression, which is needed in the Championship. And so it seems to have on paper a good mix. So I'd like to see the group stay together. I know Emma mentioned in sort of part two of the pod that there are a number of players out of contract.
Yeah.
But for me, it goes back to, you know, as Philip has said, it's a decision that the club have to get right. They have to take their time with the applications and assess the situation. But if there's a manager in place now who's hardly put her foot wrong, she's got the players playing a certain way and she's built up that positivity, and she knows, you know, she's given different players an opportunity. She understands what the vision is and they understand her vision. Then hopefully that can be a kind of opportunity for these players to stick around and say, look, Liverpool mean business. We're going to go back up to the WSL and I'm ready to commit to this club.
Yeah, you'd hope as many of them as possible do that, Joe, and that's the key. I don't want to live in a Rachel Furness-less world, to be honest with you. I want you to assure me right now that won't happen, even though I know you can't, because who can? But I just want you to hold me and tell me if it's going to be okay and Rachel Furness will stay. But she's been such a huge player that her, not just her, but, you know, there's a few others as well that you think if Liverpool could just talk them into staying, then you really got something to build from.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the fact that we've actually got new players since, you know, being in the Championship, it just goes to show that there are still players out there that do want to play for Liverpool, regardless of what league they're in. I'd love to say that Furness is going to stay and Missy Bowe is going to stay and everyone else is going to stay that's coming up to the contracts. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I just hope there's not going to be another exodus. I don't think there will be, the way that the team's pulled together at the minute. So, yeah, I think watch this space and see what Amber does with the rest of the season.
Yeah, watch the space at the Filippo. And it's interesting to look forward to next year now because we've all seen this week the TV deal getting announced and it's fantastic for women's football and it's extra money in the game, but also I think extra eyes on it. And I think both Sky and BBC will do a fantastic job on the sports. And I think it's a lovely balance for the sports as well in terms of, you know, free to wear, but also someone like Sky who I think, you know, will always take any of their sports coverage extremely seriously indeed. But there's that carrot now, Philippa, for everyone. And we might find there's a couple more teams in the WSL2 next season who maybe start to take it a bit more seriously, maybe throw a little bit more out of it. You might see one or two more go pro and sort of chase the WSL dream. And also there'll be a team come down from WSL1 that we always sort of forget about when we're thinking of who you're fighting for. Possibly Aston Villa, possibly Bristol City will take some beating. So, even if Liverpool progresses, I guess what I'm saying is it might just be that little bit tougher next season anyway.
Yeah, I think what I would like to see from the club in the summer, I think, is to maybe go out and do almost like what Manchester United did when they first started out and attract some...
Sign our captain.
Yeah, but, you know, like sign some like real star players who can basically commit to giving us 12 months of trying to get us back into the WSL. You know, throw a bit of money behind it because, you know, as you say, that carrot's there now and, you know, we need to be a club that's, you know, really striving for that. You know, we've said in part two about how we dropped the ball previously. You know, and we've got an opportunity here to basically make a statement for next season and to, you know, maybe keep the nucleus of the side together, but, you know, to draw in two or three real quality players who can really take us to that next level and get us up into the WSL. And, you know, I think that's what every fan wants to see, to be honest. And, you know, the noises from the club, as far as I'm concerned, are all positive at the moment. You know, they're saying the right things and they just need to back that up now with their actual actions.
Yeah, and that's what you want to see, Mariam, isn't it? You know, I mean, you want to see, you know, the positive talk at the moment, the positive focus, well, you know, everything that they're saying that they want to do with the women's team, you know, as Philippa says, back it up with actions now, you know, decide who you want the manager to be, decide who the best person is to take the team forward on the pitch and back them properly, you know, maybe, you know, surprise us with sort of who they can attract, you know, make sure that the top players are staying and making sure that, you know, whoever the manager is has got, you know, all the tools necessary and all the best weapons possible to get back up to WSL1 because, you know, as Liverpool supporters, that's where we all want to be.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, that process might take quite a while, it might take a year, and it might involve a few of our players leaving. I feel like if we can keep players like Sari Holland and you know, maybe we might lose Rinsola and we might lose Missy Bo, we can keep a really strong core and that nucleus, as you mentioned before, John. I think that's the most important thing, because going forward, you can always make new additions. You see, like, you know, how Spurs had Alex Morgan over for a year, and, you know, they weren't able to get the most of that, but it was a really good signing for the club and they made quite a lot of revenue from that, and also, you know, contribution to the team itself. So that's another possible thing. If we can have players coming overseas and not just sort of local talent, I think that will go a long way in expanding the squad and just always adding to the depth, because squad depth isn't something we've had in the past. We've struggled with injuries.
Yeah.
And I think the more we can slowly restructure and build and add more and more strength to our squad to have a, you know, a team where there's multiple players and playing multiple positions and there's that interchangeability that Amber is seeming to introduce in the squad, I think that is going to go a long way in helping us pave a path forward.
100%. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that anyway, and I hope you're feeling more positive about the team sort of moving forward as we, in the short term, Liverpool play at home to Blackburn Rovers ladies on Sunday. It's Sunday the 28th. It's a 6:30 kickoff, and it is live on LFC TV, which is brilliant. And I've heard there's a superstar co-commentator on that as well, which is very exciting. But yeah, Blackburn at home at 6:30 on Sunday. So do check that out. The Anfield Wrap are going to be going down. A few of us are going to be going down to cover that. So we'll be doing bits of social around it, but also hopefully if we can find a place to do it, a post-match show straight after as well. This is my way of telling Philippa now she's got to do some work after the game, but yeah, we'll be doing that sort of, you know, straight after. So hopefully it'll be after another Liverpool win, another 5 goals. That'll be nice, wouldn't it? But do check it out on LFC TV, and yeah, hopefully next season we'll have a fantastic team on the pitch and we'll all be able to get down and watch, and we're going to be doing loads to push that as well. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to my panel. Thanks a lot to Neil and all his panels, and hope you've enjoyed the slightly different weekend. Sports Social Podcast Network.